I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Watch your podcasties and podcastettes and, all you lot listening. Thank you so much for continuing to support the Rob De Banks A to Z of Festivals podcast. Special one this week. Very special. I'm halfway through this bonkers charity ride, so I'm sat in a hotel room near Preston. And, it's kind of just off the edge of a motorway. And I've just cycled a long way, so I'm feeling a little bit shaky. So I'm not getting emotional about the fact that I'm introducing my wife this week. Yes, it is, of course, Josie De Banks' turn to step up to the mic. Not something she tends to like doing, as she would admit herself. So, yeah, really honoured to get some airtime with Lady De Bank, Josie, and spilling the beans, hopefully, on some of her wisdom of 15 years of running festivals and having to put up with me, basically. So, this week's special guest, Josie De Bank. So, today on the A to Z of Festivals podcast with Rob De Bank, I'm interviewing someone I should know a little bit about. I think we've been together for about 26 years, married for 17, and got four kids, a few festivals, a pygmy goat or two, some cats, and yes, it is, of course, Josie De Bank. How are you doing, Josie?
Hi. It's 28 years, actually, Robbie.
There you go. I'd committed my first marital blunder already, only a few seconds in. So, obviously when I started this podcast, it's about festivals, it's about life at festivals, and the joy they all bring to us. So an obvious starting point would be with the wife who we've created all our festival moments with, but we've thought we'd keep it till number nine, just to get everyone warmed up for this great moment. There may be an argument or two along the way, so stand by. Look, people.
Let's just remember, Robbie, that I had to remind you that you should do a podcast with your wife, Josie, because you've been running festivals with her for 15 years.
It was always the plan.
Include me in your festival history.
Look, I didn't really want Emily Evers to do the first one. It was always going to be a Josie De Bank one, and then Emily sort of popped up. Anyway, yeah, just, you know, relax. Just pretend you're being interviewed by someone you like and someone you know, and or feel comfortable with. And let's just relax into it. I mean, we've just turned off the phone. We've put the baby in bed. There'll probably be a few rings at the doorbell along the way, but let's dive into the A to Z of festivals. So I kind of want to stay a bit neutral on this and hear your side of the story, because I think a lot of people have heard mine and we're all bored of hearing my voice and looking at my picture. So, you know, Josie is obviously the
creative force that drives Rob De Bank and has made him who he is over the last 25 years.
There we go. Said in a nutshell.
The powerhouse that has supported him through and through.
You're supposed to be humble and kept quiet. So tell us, what was your first festival memory, Josie?
So my first festival memory was I was 18. I just met you at Goldsmiths College, and you thought it was a really good idea for us to go to Glastonbury on one of our first dates. In your 2 CV, was that right?
Yeah, so anyone under the age of about 30 won't know what a 2 CV is, but if you've seen the Pink Panther film, the really, really...
old, clapped-out, shoddy...
Yeah, it was a grey, rusty 2 CV that we bought for £50 off my mum's friend. And, yeah, we drove it down to Somerset on one of our first dates.
Yeah, with a couple of friends. One was called Lou, I think. Do you remember? And anyway, you didn't have any tickets for us to get in, did you? So we scaled the fence. So
sorry, Michael.
Sorry, Emily. And Emily. It's really bad. But anyway, we got over the fence on Thursday. Oh, that was it. Jason was with us, I think, and Gid. And we got in and we just had an absolutely amazing, life-changing weekend. I'd never seen anything like it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we both remember, you know, commando crawling across the wet grass as the dawn was breaking. We'd park the car in a sort of lay-by down the road, which you wouldn't be able to do these days, and crawled across
attack.
A field.
We're Massive Attack doing their sound check.
Yeah, we somehow either got under
Ralph,
or over
what,
the
Rolf
fence.
Rolf Harris was on. Okay. As we got in, I think.
Okay, probably shouldn't mention that.
No.
But yeah, Massive Attack were definitely on. And I think we got some crusties. I don't know if it was that year, but it was one year we paid some crusties with either beer or Rizzlers or something to let us through their tunnel. People used to dig tunnels, didn't they? Or you'd get a grappling hook and I'd push you over and you landed in Glastonbury. So what was that sort of first few moments of being in Glastonbury like?
I think what struck me the most was the smell and the haze and the light and the fact that this enormous, amazing, creative town, temporary town, had arrived in the middle of Somerset for a very short period of time. And it was, yeah, the atmosphere was really overpowering.
And was that straight away, were you thinking, oh, God, we could do something like this? Or into our relationship.
No, we were only 18, weren't we? We didn't know what we wanted to do then. No, it didn't even cross my mind. I felt like I wanted to be working outside and be creative outside, perhaps. But no, I was just so amazed by the atmosphere that I wasn't really thinking anything.
And I mean, it was 12 years later that we actually put on our first festival. So there was a lot of Glastonbury's in between then and when we first started Bestival. I mean, Glastonbury, when we started, you know, going was pretty anarchic, wasn't it? It was quite sort of rebellious and anything goes.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of travellers there because this is 28 years, is it? So there were lots and lots of travellers, and Lost Vegas.
Vagueness
was a big, big part of it that felt very rebellious at the time and very underground and like nothing you'd ever seen before.
So it was like Joe Rush and the Mutoid Waste Crew were building those giant sculptures out of rusty cars, and Shangri-La was still 18 years away in the distance. So it's,
there was the ballroom, which was amazing, and the diner with Debs and her husband. It was all...
Someone did remind me the other day that we took them on a very, very hot Glastonbury into this tent. Everyone had to get into a ball gown or a dinner jacket and sat down for a three-course dinner at, like, lunchtime.
It was our 30th birthday, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
There we go. Just as we were starting Bestival.
Maybe.
So what's kind of changed in the festival landscape since then? Big question, but you know, that was obviously the start of our festival journey, and we'll get on to Bestival and Camp Bestival in a minute. But what's kind of, you know, we're going to Glastonbury this year, we always go, it's our birthday weekends. Me and Josie were born a day apart in the same year, so it's always somewhere around our birthdays, Midsummer Day. Do you still get that same excitement about going to Glastonbury?
I definitely get the same excitement going to Glastonbury. It's incredible, absolutely amazing. But I don't have, sadly, the desire to go to other festivals anymore.
controversial.
I like going to festivals with my children, but I think I've been doing festivals for a long time, and also I'm quite scared of the drug culture at festivals now, and I can't quite get my head around the way drugs are taken anymore, sadly. That's a big thing for me.
I mean, it's a very, very relevant topic, yeah. I mean, skipping quickly on from that, because we tend to keep this quite lighthearted, let's go back through some of the other festivals that we went to, because obviously the Big Chill was a great festival for us. We had loads of brilliant, great Big Chills, Reading and Leeds, Latitude, the early years of that.
Yeah, that was amazing. Really, really good show. Where else have we been? We've been head down doing our own shows for 16 years.
Yeah, I mean, we used to go to Tribal Gathering and Phoenix and
Homelands, that was a big thing, and Creamfields. The day shows were really good a long time ago.
Yeah, Homelands, which is the now Boomtown site in Natalie Bowl in Winchester. So, yeah, we kind of earned our festival spurs. But, I suppose now we're entering our middle age, then, you know, maybe the allure of going to so many festivals is not so big. Although this year, with less festivals of our own on, I definitely intend on trying to go to some of the new ones.
Yeah, and there's some festivals that I've not been to that have been around for a long time that I'd really like to go to. I'd love to go to Wilderness. I'd love to go to Port Elliot. I'd love to go to Lost Village and see what they're up to, and Part Life as well. Really like to go, and I think their lineup's amazing. And you know, I like a weekend show where I can stay in a hotel.
Okay, so let's sort of fast forward from that crusty adventure at Glastonbury in the early 90s, and let's fast forward to we'd set up Sunday Best, the club and the record label, and you were the youngest licensed bar owner in London, I think, with your bar Kokomo, which was an amazing bar on Old Street where we used to have crazy parties. And so we were really sort of deep into, you know, it was rave culture, there was sort of early, you know, club culture was booming. And then fast forward to 2004 when we set up the first festival, and just think about that sort of early meetings when we were looking for sites and stuff and what that was like.
Yeah, so we really had no idea what we were doing. It just felt like a natural progression, didn't it, to go from doing lots and lots of parties to doing something bigger in a field. So I think you and John found the first site. I didn't actually have anything to do with that. And in your usual style, you just cracked on with this idea that you had in your head and just expected me to pick up the pieces. But it was equally very, very exciting. Yeah, the meetings are exciting.
We all had our own little department, didn't we? And I mean, yours was obviously largely creative, but also you were running this bar in East London. So when we opened the gates, then we were doing everything from ripping tickets to making cocktails, and you and your best friend T were behind the bar.
Yeah, we ran the bars. Well, we ran the big cocktail bar, the Bollywood bar. I felt like I very quickly had to learn how to run an event. Literally every day for 6 months, I learned something new. And it was really rather challenging. I think the trickiest thing was to have to pretend to a lot of people that you'd sold all these tickets and it was going to be amazing. Like, we really had to lie, didn't we, to convince people to come, because you know, everyone thought there was 12,000 people coming, and I think there was only 6,000 people. And
I thought it was four, but
yeah, I can't quite remember. But nevertheless, we created this amazing event that went really, really well, and we were absolutely exhausted by the end of it, but we pulled it off.
And I mean, I remember some little sort of flashbacks of you and T in a golf buggy with these big bags of coins that you had to take to the bank.
We didn't have golf buggies that year. We had to walk the pound coins up that massive hill at Robin Hill, And then we were all sharing a teepee. Do you remember?
Yeah, we're covered in spiders.
And Norman and Zoe were next door to us, raving.
Yeah.
And we were trying to sleep because we had to get up the next day to...
Norman and Zoe, obviously Fatboy Slim was one of the first headliners. And we were really lucky that first year because, well, it was kind of luck and partially hard work, but we sort of pulled it out of the bag with our headliners for a first year show. And there weren't that many festivals around like us, in fact very, very few, and we managed to have some really great headliners, and we pulled in the favours from people we knew, like Basement Jacks and the Bees and
Fatboy Slim headlined on the Sunday night. I don't know, was it Fatboy Slim or was it Zoe Kirk? I remember Zoe DJing in the Bollywood Bar that year. Do you remember, in the corner? It was fun.
No memory whatsoever, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah. And that year we went to India and we bought loads of stuff to decorate the show, and I think that was really key, wasn't it? That it looked lovely and colourful, and
yeah,
we'd shipped all this stuff over.
And it was just such a DIY culture, wasn't it? It was literally us and our friends, our amazing friends who helped us out and still help us out, and, you know, turning up in a field with a few vans worth of stuff and then hand painting all the signs and really creating that whole start of boutique festivals.
Yeah, I had my brother running the bar. I think my mum and dad were doing something. Yeah, it was lovely.
And I mean, difficult to pick out moments of our amazing festival, but, you know, through the 15 years that it's run so far, what any sort of headliner or act kind of highlights?
Yeah, I think Elton John was my all-time favourite act. I think
so, like, can you, like, for people who are listening that weren't there, what was it like having Elton there?
Oh, it was huge. And you also felt like he really wanted to be there. He was really excited to play at a festival. He just oozed fun and charisma, and he'd had a jacket made especially for the show, and he dedicated a song to you, and he had a brilliant time. And then also you got that lovely letter from him afterwards, and it felt really sincere, didn't it?
Yeah, no, one of the only thank you letters that has ever been written, and a properly pen on paper thank you letter. I mean, I remember in the afternoon, I think it was a sunny day, and I just remember this really sleek black helicopter starting to fly around the site, kind of orbiting, and everyone just stopped what they were doing. Its time seemed to stand still, and everyone knew that it was Elton, and he was coming in on his chopper.
Yeah, definitely. And also the great thing about Elton was he confirmed the year before on the Sunday night, didn't he? We just finished watching The Cure, and we went back to our caravan that we were staying in, and you opened your laptop, and Doris had sent you a really nice email.
Big up, Doris.
Yeah, that was great. That was the best, because we knew we had next year in the bag.
Yeah, which is one of the... I mean, you know, touching on this, because I know you're married to me, obviously, but with my sort of booking agent hat on, then what's it like being with or married to someone whose job it is to curate 1, 2, 3, 4 festivals?
It's really, really hard work. So,
I mean, just, you know, just tell it as it is.
No, but the 2 months running up to announcing the show, just we're getting more and more stressful because talent's been harder and harder to buy. The price of talent's been pushed up. There's just so many reasons why it was getting harder and harder, and really was quite unpleasant and quite stressful because we kept losing acts, and you would take it very personally and have to go back to the drawing board and come up with new ideas. And we couldn't afford the acts that we wanted because they were being bought out across multiple shows. And yeah, I'm really glad that we're not doing that this year.
There's the doorbell. So is that a good or a bad thing?
What's that?
Being married to the man who books the headliners.
Well, it's amazing if it goes right, and it's not so great if it goes wrong. But it's been really interesting, and I think the kids have found it exciting as well, and, you know, coming up with ideas, especially on Camp Bestival, it's really good. You know, you've managed to get Lewis Capaldi this year. Is that his name?
Yeah, Lewis Capaldi. Yeah. Lewis Calamari, as he calls himself. I'm just going to see who's at the door. Hold on.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
This is Rob DeBank's A to Z of Festivals. Subscribe now and please remember to rate. Right, where were we? Lewis Capaldi. So, headliner anxieties apart, what's been the kind of best thing about doing running festivals? What's your kind of favourite bit? Because you sort of turned from kind of initially doing the hand-painted signs and the creative and the whole sort of helping, well, me and you sort of coming up with the vision of it, and then, you know, you ended up kind of running it, business and everything. So what's been the kind of best bit of that?
I think the best bit and the reason I kept doing it is because I could create moments for people, special moments, and create memories for people. You know, like fireworks, video mapping the Camp Festival castle and the Mirrorball and creating the Indian temple and shipping it to Toronto and just coming up with ideas, quite crazy ideas, and delivering them on the ground and giving people something to talk about and creating a special place for people to meet new people and go on to have kids together and get married. And it's, yeah, I think creating moments is why I've done it. And, you know, I've created moments for my mum and dad. I've created moments for for, you know, our kids, you know, our friends, children at Camp Festival. And, nothing can buy doing that for other people.
And you kind of touched on it, referencing, you know, the drugs and stuff at festivals, which is obviously every promoter's, you know, very primary concern, you know, the safety of people. But what's been the, not necessarily the worst bit in a dark way, and we don't need to go down, you know, any particular route, but, you know, what's the worst bit about running a festival?
So the day-to-day worst bit is the money worry. Above and beyond, you know, you're literally living in a casino all year round. You know, you're watching every day ticket wraps come in and you're translating them into the budget. And it just takes the fun out of it, the event and life. It's really, really, really hard work. Of course, if you're selling out in 24 hours like Reading and Leeds, it's amazing, but sadly there's so many festivals now, that's a luxury that's not there anymore. And it just got so stressful, and it still is. So I'd say that's the worst bit, aside from the obvious.
So I mean, you know, we've had 15 amazing years of festival, and we'll see what happens with that in the future. Sort of halfway through that adventure. Well, actually, 2 or 3 years in, then tell us what happened where you seemed to get pregnant.
Yeah, so I think the third Bestival, I was pregnant at the third Bestival.
Did you actually get pregnant at Bestival?
No, I didn't. I did get pregnant at one of the shows, but and we had Arlo, and I, at that point, started to say to you, let's turn Bestival into a family show. You know, this is amazing. We've had a little baby and let's do something great for him. And then I soon realised that actually that was a stupid idea, and Bestival was just starting to go really well, and it had formed an identity. So we came up with the concept, and I made an appointment with Paul Pinnock, who was the estate manager of Lulworth Castle, because I remember going to the big chill there and thinking it was great. And you and I got in the car and went to meet Paul, and the pieces, the ducks or whatever you say, just fell in place very, very quickly. We sketched the first site map there and then, and we still continue to use the same layout, don't we? Nothing's really changed. And it just felt really natural and the right thing to do. And actually, we put the first Camp Bestival on and it broke even, which is kind of unheard of. The concept felt like it was really meant to be.
Yeah, I mean, it quickly fell into a sort of formula that we haven't really strayed from, whereas with Bestival, or you see it with a lot of other festivals, people chop and change this and that. I think Glastonbury doesn't, and, you know, well, there's a lot of festivals that don't, but I think with Camp Bestival, it's like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So, yeah, we've had our ups and downs, but I think it's largely how our vision was, which is, you know, a beautiful, safe family festival to educate and, you know, to escape from reality and have some amazing bands along the way.
Yeah, and I think to create moments for parents and children together is what it's all about. And I think the reason it's worked is because the emphasis is not on the talent, and we haven't had the same stresses that we've had.
Might not be for you.
No, but it's a different kind of lineup, isn't it?
So someone who hasn't been to camp, and this is by no means an advert for Camp Bestival, but just because I suppose it's the jewel in our crown, and it's probably a favourite thing that we do out of everything that we do, you know, in our lives. What is the magic of camp?
The magic of camp for me is to see the children, the parents, the grandparents, all having a really great time and doing stuff that they wouldn't normally do together day to day, like making a big cardboard castle, or all dancing, dads wearing silly hats, kids being pushed around in trolleys, kids playing wild in campsites and meeting new friends and doing bushcraft with Spinny Hollow and trying new food in the Feast Collective and watching science shows. And it's endless, and it's all simple, and it's all free, and it's just earthy. It's positive.
Free once you get in.
Free once you get in, yeah. It's not, yeah.
No. Okay, and I mean, in amongst all the hullabaloo of sort of running the festival and booking everything and coming up with it, because I think we've gone over this point before in other podcasts where it's kind of, you think it's all set in stone, and then every year, every single thing needs doing again. You get people coming up to you and saying, so you do Camp Bestival, what do you do the rest of the year? And it's like, no, you don't understand. You could actually just spend the entire year doing nothing else, couldn't you?
Yeah, definitely. It takes a whole year to produce a festival.
And it always sort of, you know, even if you don't change the layout, then things change. But aside from all that, I think we've both and our whole team have got a real passion for, you know, the environment, for trying to, you know, cut down on the waste at festivals, you know, single-use plastics, tent wastage, which isn't such a big problem at camp. But tell us a bit about how you feel about that.
Well, at camp, it's amazing because your parents are forever trying to educate their children, and it just comes really natural to everyone to pick up their rubbish and put it in the bin and to take their tents home and all their other belongings. And you know, at the end of Camp Bestival, the campsites are clean. You hardly need the litter pickers to come in. At the end of Bestival and other shows of that nature, the campsites look like refugee camps. They're absolutely hideous. and really, really quite depressing.
So what's the answer? I know we were all searching for it, and a lot of festivals are making some progress on it, but what is the answer?
Well, there's loads of answers, isn't there? That people to take care of their belongings, to respect the environment, for shops not to sell just tents for a tenner that make you feel you can leave them behind. I mean, yeah, it's endless.
Okay, cool. Well, let's wrap this up at this point,
because we're ending up on rubbish.
Not on rubbish. No, I was going to ask you what the future of festivals looks like, and not necessarily our own, but you know, obviously when we started there were 10 festivals probably in the UK, and now there are, you know, 700-800. What where do you see the whole festival market going?
I haven't really thought about it. I've thought about where I see my vision going and my dream festival, which is all about kids and families and, you know, exploring that journey more and being more creative. And I'd quite like to move away from a traditional festival where you have a main stage and all the focus and the budget is on that, and create more diverse environments, you know, sort of perhaps, you know, like a Burning Man for kids that's all about workshops and play.
There you go. On that note, we will leave it before we get into an argument about who...
Robbie losing the main stage.
Robbie wants more acts, Josie wants more creative, let's have a punch up. But yeah, thank you so much, Josie. We do talk about festivals all the time. We live our lives around festivals, and our kids hear nothing else but stuff about festivals. So it's lovely to catch up with you about festivals. So we needed to really get that off our chests. But yeah. Ladies and gents, okay. Josie DeBank.
Bye.
This is Rob DeBank's A to Z of Festivals. Subscribe now and please remember to rate.
We're all looking to make more sustainable choices, but making your own shoes out of natural materials could pose a few challenges. At the Allbirds Innovation Lab, they're doing all the science-y stuff like research and testing to create shoes from natural materials, like leather made from plants, eucalyptus tree fiber, and sugarcane. It's not rocket science, it's shoe science. Allbirds is making shoes better than natural. They're super natural. Find your perfect pair at allbirds.com today. That's allbirds.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.